Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can call us 410-662-8780. We had a crazy popular topic a couple of weeks ago. We wanted to come back and do a second segment on the best thing you ever ate. We got fantastic stories.
It was a lot of fun.
Even some emails after the fact and lots of calls. So please share your stories. Share maybe the best thing you ever cooked, the best something someone ever cooked for you, the background for it, which we heard more and more was super important. So it's 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org.
It's so fun when we cook each night and know that there are a lot of people out in the dining room that are having their anniversary or it's their birthday, celebrating something. And it's just been great to hear people's stories and to we all know how much food, you know, really represents celebrations and the memories of those. And I just recently cooked for one of our employees for their wedding. And it was one of the greatest joys of cooking I've ever had in my life. I mean, just knowing that I was making 26 people happy, the bride and groom happy, who are good friends of mine. And I honestly don't think I've ever been so happy cooking in my life. I've never cooked for a wedding before. It was the first time.
I've never known you to be that happy cooking.
Oh, Tony. Jeez. So, I mean, it was just, I mean, that's soon going to be my favorite story because, I mean, it was just such a blast.
Did you remember to eat something?
Yeah, I managed to. Uh-huh. I eventually managed to.
So we do have, we would do a disservice to listeners to not give a couple of the stories that sent in emails after the last program. This is from Mary in Essex. A peach dumpling at Cutstown Folk Festival was the best thing I ever ate. Perfect pastry amid heat and humidity, made by an Amish woman and her young daughter, rolling the pastry by hand for hundreds of people.
Wow, that sounds so good. Yum.
It does, and that is definitely a labor of love. That's a warm job.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Pastry and the heat and humidity. Heat and, look at me stumbling.
Uh-oh.
That's what I get. And then there was, we had a guest talking about eating in Sri Lanka and having a Sri Lankan parent and his mom's cooking being so great. There was, so there's another guest who emailed in. There was wood and charcoal grilled goat in Dar es Salaam a few years back. Smoky and chewy yet tender. Best part was the dipping sauce, fresh squeezed limes, the sweet kind, loaded with macerated fresh bird chilies.
Oh, my.
It does sound remarkable.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And Don in Baltimore was nice enough to write, for your listener looking for Sri Lankan ingredients, there is Spice Lanka near Rockville. It's a grocery store there.
That's good. That's good to know.
They can find stuff there.
I'm going to be grilling a goat this Sunday.
Really?
Yeah. Again, same people. We're having a party out at the farm, and I cannot wait. I have this kind of makeshift grill that we built. Actually, Colby helped me do it, or did it. I did nothing. I stood there and said, put it there. What do you think, Colby? But pretty much, it's just cinder block grill with two of the old grill tops from Pazzo.
Honesty is good for you.
And, oh my gosh, it's the best. I have all this wood on my farm to burn, so there's, you know, and it's all ready to go, and I love it. Right now, it's full of grass, though. It needs to be some grilling needs to go on inside of that grill. But yeah, I can't wait to grill a baby goat. I might get a second one just because I love it so much. And I can't wait to put, I'm going to make chimichurri and put it in the cavity. And I think that's just going to be super fun. Yeah. And then just, you know, pulling all that great meat off after it's nice and tender and smoked. I love chivito. One of the best things ever.
So let's see. We've got one more email here. This is a fun story. So let me preface this by acknowledging that context and the people you're greatly influencing, the bestness of the meals I'm going to cut to. The best meal I ever ate was on an art history tour in the summer of 2001 with my grandmother and some other folks from Arcadia University when I was 17. She was originally going to go with my grandfather, but sadly he passed away earlier that year. So it turned into kind of a high school graduation present for me, and I also was helping keep my grandmother company. The trip started in Spain for a week, and then we cruised around the Mediterranean on a small cruise ship for another week. Lucky kid I was.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The best meal was probably, not certain, in Greece, on a beach with black sand, on the outdoor patio of a restaurant that had a wooden trellis for some shade. They served us a delicate paella, and I remember there being small mussels, peas, feta cheese. The whole setting was just heavenly. I remember the paella being soft and palatable. The mussels weren't chewy. The feta cheese melted in my mouth. The breeze from the sea and the sun added to the pleasant late afternoon languor under the sunlit trellis.
I'd like to go there.
Yeah, I'm like,
that sounds really good.
I read that. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep and have a pleasant dream.
Exactly. That's just beautiful. I've never been to Greece. Have you ever been there?
I have been to Greece.
Yeah. When did you go there? Long time ago?
I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
1980.
Did you have any experiences like that?
I had an experience drinking a lot of ouzo.
I kind of remember that story now that you...
Yeah, with some... There were some Danish sailors involved and yeah.
What?
It's an important learning experience. So what is still on your list? Because we had people calling a great deal last time, and you can still give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. We had a lot of people calling the last time, and so I know we didn't get through everything on your list
right.
of the best things you've ever eaten.
One of the best things I've ever eaten is at a restaurant in Paris called La Serre, and... It's interesting because there have been a couple of different chefs at La Serre since the first time I ever had this dish. And I believe the chef that came up with the dish, he has his own restaurant now. So thankfully you can go to his place and have, at least the last time I ate there, it was on his menu. And it's a dish with truffles and foie gras. And
I'm shocked that you would like that.
Yeah, it's a big surprise. And it's macaroni that he stuffs with foie gras and truffles, and then there are pieces of truffle on the plate. There's truffle in the sauce. It has a light reduction sauce on the plate. He also puts something that feels a little bit like bechamel with Reggiano cheese in it, a little drizzle of that on the plate. And oh my gosh, I mean, I feel like I've been eating that dish for probably 18 years, something like that. And the last time I was there, they had truffles from Australia because it was, you know, that time of the year. And the dish was a little bit different, but La Serre is definitely one of my favorite restaurants. I've had many experiences there.
A really beautiful room.
You and I have eaten there. We've been there with staff. I've eaten there on my own. I've eaten there with my sister and my brother-in-law and friends. And it's just, I think some of my very favorite memories of being in Paris were at La Serre. It is a beautiful room. And I've talked about the restaurant before because one of the coolest things to me is, I'll never forget the first time you and I went there. It was in August. It was obviously hot outside, and it was in 1994, and people were still smoking in the restaurants then in Paris.
Everyone was still smoking.
Everyone was smoking, and also they did a tremendous amount of tableside back then. And I'll just never forget being there. And I know I had a summer dress on and just thinking, gosh, it's a little warm in here. It's getting kind of smoky in here. And all of a sudden you hear this rumbling. And I remember looking at you and going, just, you know, hey, what's happening right now? And the ceiling opens up and all the smoke and cooking, you know, smells and everything just wafted out and fresh air came into that restaurant. And it's not a little part of the ceiling. It's a big part of the ceiling. And it just felt amazing. And then all of a sudden you could see the stars and the moon and, you know, they have plants around the top of that opening. And it was just, I'm just like, that was just one of the, I'll never forget that. And I can't wait when I'm sitting there. I can't wait for them to open. It's like, I know I'm like a child, but it is that childlike love for that kind of thing. It's just like, it's such a treat. And it really is. It is probably one of my favorite restaurants I've ever eaten in.
And you were scared to death the first time you heard that thing opening up.
Well, it was just weird. You know, I'm like, what's happening? It makes a pretty good sound. I wasn't scared to death. But yeah, anyway. No, all right. La Serre.
I mean, on my list, I can't do a list like that without listing fried chicken with my great-grandmother.
Hmm.
Ooh, that was an absolute anyone in the family was lucky to be invited to her house to have that. Mm. And you knew it was buttermilk fried chicken. It was white bread crumb. It was very, very straightforward. And a lot of black pepper. Hmm. And she would always do it in the morning, let it sit on the stovetop, and it would get this fantastic crust on it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And just warm it back up in the oven. And she always had quick pickles that she'd made mm-hmm. that were quite sweet and sour and a little bit spicy, just little cucumber pickles with lots of onion.
Perfect accompaniment.
And lots of that, and could be a million other things on the table, but I didn't care about anything else. All I wanted was fried chicken and pickles.
And she would do the whole bird, the breast and the legs and everything, right?
She reserved the necks for herself.
Oh yeah, yum. Mm.
That never made it past the first frying. That was always like the snack for the cook.
I get it.
But
that's awesome.
That's, I think, one of my favorite things I've ever received was her cast iron. Mm. Once upon a time, which sad, but yeah. Amazing to have that.
Sure. And you can give it to your kids.
So why don't we go to a caller? We have Zini in Baltimore. Zini, go ahead.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, Cindy. Hey, girl. How you doing?
Good. Hi. Good morning. Oh, good afternoon. Sorry.
Yeah. So we're talking about food eclairons, right?
Food, the best thing
food
you ever
eclairons,
ate.
Food eclairons, things that like made us. So, oh my God.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What you got? What you got?
So, one of the first things was when I was a little girl, and my father took me to Brooklyn to his brother, and who was married to an Italian woman, and I had spaghetti and meatballs. Mm-hmm. And my mother hated to cook. Everything was from a can with the water in the can. That was the vegetable. And she just hated it, except the old Jewish ladies taught her how to do Jewish food for the holidays. That was fabulous, but not every night.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So there it was. She hated it, and it was very obvious. So I go to Brooklyn, and I would sit down, and this plate was put before me, and I put it in my mouth, and I just went, oh, my God, what is this?
Right.
Spaghetti and meatballs. There it was. Still a favorite. The best. Second, years ago, when Ed and I were first married, we went to the Sans Souci in D.C., of course, a fond memory. And I had a dessert. Now, my mother used to make lemon meringue pies, and Ed made chocolate cake. But I had a dessert, and I said, what was this? What just went in my mouth? Mm. And I tapped the server and said, what was this? And he said, oh, it's a simple butter cream. And I went, oh, okay. And from then on, I had to make it. I had to have it again. So, mm-hmm. of course, mm-hmm. you have to make it, right?
Definitely.
There it was. A Grand Marnier buttercream from the Sans Souci.
Oh, yum.
It was good enough for the Kennedys. It was good enough for me.
There
and
you
I
go.
Adored it.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Vinny.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you.
So let's see. We've got an email coming in. Johnny says, I have two.
Oh, good.
Fresh off the stalk, ear of corn from a farm stand in Beltsville. It was raw and so, so sweet. And two, barbecue brisket from Martin's Barbecue outside of Nashville.
Ooh.
So expletive good.
Awesome. Oh, barbecue.
So.
When I was a little girl, I lived in North Carolina, and we used to go to Wilson and get barbecue. And, I mean, I was raised, not raised on it. You know, my mom didn't make barbecue, but
barbecue would be the
way,
opposite of what.
Well,
your mom's cooking is very good, but she's Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yeah, it's very Pennsylvania Dutch. But yeah, to have barbecue in Wilson, I mean, this place is famous and so good. But, it's interesting how barbecue is so different from region to region.
It is. Pretty cool. When we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, we're live. We're taking your calls, 410-662-8780. Give us the story or just the information on the best thing you ever ate. Maybe the best thing you ever drank. Mm. All of that and more on WIPR.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And you're listening to us live on WYPR. Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. We're talking about the best thing you ever ate.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten some
or really, drank. We're including drank. That today. Yeah, I like that part.
It doesn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah, let's hear about some good drinking.
I have a little list.
I think you have some of those, yeah.
So I've got an email here from a listener, Oren, in Baltimore. And the best thing I get to eat is every time my mother makes beef stew. It was my grandmother's recipe, and my mother carries on her tradition. It's a simple stew, large chopped veggies, beef that just falls apart, and get this, the entire top of the pot is covered in big fluffy dumplings.
Oh.
My mother makes it every fall. Hey, he got you dumplings, right?
I want that right now.
My mother makes it every fall. Every time I walk in the door and smell it cooking on the stove, I'm transported right back to my grandma's house
so
and hear her hollering, "Hey, honey, what took you so long?"
Oh, that's super sweet. Oh, my goodness. So, love it.
So I just talked about my grandma, great-grandmother's fried chicken, so that kind of matches right up.
That sure does.
Yeah. Why don't we go to Stefan, I hope I'm saying it correctly, in Baltimore. Stefan, you're on the air.
Hey there.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. So what you got?
So one of the best experiences that I had was actually in the Galapagos Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a spaghetti frutta di mare with just fresh off the sea seafood, some shrimp, some scallops, some clams, delicious, fresh, everything. Nothing was chewy. It was delicious.
That can be so spectacular. One of the cool things about all that seafood is you really... You develop the flavor in the pan, and it just flavors all of the warm pasta going in with it. Was it fresh herbs, garlic, lemon?
Yep, mm-hmm. Everything with just a simple tomato sauce, right by the sea.
That's
wonderful.
Now you're making me jealous. That's a a spectacular summertime dish.
Good for you.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks, Stefan.
Thanks.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
that's why I end up landing on Italy food wise first on my list, because mm-hmm. of the very simple, you know, things, little dynamic relationships between ingredients that are simple and not particularly elaborated. You know,
that's what's so amazing is that the food is so simple, but it's the product that just shines. It's
yeah.
it is the explanation of why does a product matter so much. There it is, right there in front of you when you get to eat it.
Let's go to Maureen in Catonsville. Maureen, go ahead.
Hi,
Maureen.
Tony and Cindy.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And whenever I hear you ask this question, I think of this story that my children and their children are terribly tired of hearing.
So you're going to share it? You're going to share it with us?
Well, we want to hear it.
Boy, you're sweet as pie.
Well, as a child, although my mother did not cook most vegetables to death, she served that gray-green stuff out of a can that she called asparagus.
Oh, that's just kind of like, it tastes, I don't know, somehow like cross between algae and mud.
Yes, there you go. That's definitely the experience I had, Tony. So I hated it. And did not eat asparagus for years until I went with my aunt to visit an elderly cousin in Hagerstown who grew her own asparagus in the backyard. And, of course, by then I was old enough and well-mannered enough, thanks to this mother, that, you know, I didn't have the heart to refuse this asparagus that she was so proud of. Lucky me, because I think it was the best thing I ever tasted.
Mm.
Certainly nothing like that stuff that came out of the can.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Now, everybody in my family loves asparagus. You know, it's just the best thing about spring.
I agree.
That is always the thing I look forward to the most food-wise in the spring, because it just tells me that, well, everything is rolling now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Thanks, Maureen.
Well, thanks,
yes.
Maureen.
Good. Yes.
And I always tell the kids, you know, you got to give it a second chance.
I agree.
So
good. That's awesome.
Or you can just give them no choice.
Thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Have
Loving
a good day.
Show.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I agree with her. I had so many experiences. I mean, you know, when we were kids, we had a lot of canned vegetables that were, I know I grew up part of my life in Indiana. We were in, you know, good farming area, and we certainly got great local corn and some things, but a lot of things we had came out of a can.
Yes, but did you eat snake?
No. Why would I do that? What are you talking about?
No, you can't tell a story about the first time you ate snake?
No. But yeah, I mean, I totally understand what she's saying. It's just such a big difference in having something that's fresh out of the garden and, you know, versus the whole canned or frozen food thing.
I was actually not talking about a garden snake. It's sounds a little scary if you haven't had it. My roommate in college is from Taiwan. His sister-in-law was a great cook. The thing I was most surprised I've ever eaten was snake.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be kind of surprised if I was eating snake, too.
Yeah.
But I would eat it.
It was just fantastic.
Good.
She had made a broth, cooked it in the broth, charred it on a grill, and served the hoisin sauce, which was super exotic to me. And this is 1986, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Super exotic to me at that point in time. And oh, my goodness. It was
Have you ever had it since then? Is that the last time you had snake?
No, I've had it a couple of times since then.
Cool.
But that was, honestly, that was the best I've ever had it. And it was easily the most surprised I've been. I mean, I'm not scared of food or different organ meats or any of that kind. Never have been. But that just wasn't on the list.
Sure. Well, that's cool. That's a great experience.
I'm sure it makes frog's legs more accessible.
Oh, I love frog's legs.
Oh,
I know. I agree. What's the difference? I mean, it just depends on what you have available to you, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what food is about.
So
what
else is on your list?
Oh my goodness. I think the dinner we had at, in Italy at a farm, with a winemaker and his mom cooking and having, actually driving around and seeing the wild asparagus everywhere.
You're talking about Alberto's mom
in
Umbria.
Umbria. And seeing the wild asparagus grow because it's so thin and tall and it's just everywhere. Obviously, it's wild. And I just getting to actually eat it. And I mean, to me, again, it's the experience getting to eat in their home, in their farmhouse, was extraordinary. And she is such a good cook. And we had so many dishes. One of the things that was on the table was almost like a scrambled egg with truffle in it. And it was just sitting there, you know, it sort of had, it looked like, you know, a little parchment paper on top of it. It was on a plate. And it just looked so... You know, like, you know, your mom made this wonderful thing for you, but you had no idea it had truffles in it and, you know, came from their land. They're their truffles. And it was just one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten. And to have that simple, humble ingredient of an egg paired with the truffle, one of the most amazing ingredients that you can eat, that was so special. And then we had this gigantic bowl of, you know, spaghetti or whatever pasta it was with cheese and oil, extra virgin olive oil and just tons and tons and tons of truffle. I couldn't believe how many truffles were in that bowl. And they were sort of finely chopped. And then we had the the game bird dish with the, you know, where she made the sauce from the liver and the
farona, the guinea fowl. The farona.
Oh my goodness, the guinea fowl.
She thickened the sauce with the blood from the bird.
Oh, that was just like one. I mean, that whole meal, it was just dish after dish after dish. And here we are sitting with her and her friend and, you know, and Alberto's nephew, you know, a young guy was at the table with a couple of younger
Francesco,
kids.
Yeah.
And it was something that a dream, I mean, it's like eating in a dream. It was a beautiful place with beautiful people, wonderful kind, just everything about it was like, that'll never happen again ever in my life. So thankful for that experience.
If you remember, she was probably 85 at the time and had someone helping her with the food. The only thing that she actually ate herself was the spaghetti with the truffle. Everything. She's like, you know what? I don't have a big appetite. This is what I'm after.
That was the thing to eat. It was so beautiful. But that was a great experience.
To remind listeners, we're listening to us live. You can call us today, 410-662-8780. We're talking about the best thing you ever ate. Actually, we're talking about the best things we've ever eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And we have listeners.
We'd love to hear from you.
Giving us their stories and sending some emails. You can email us. ForemanWolf@WYPR.org as well, if you want to interrupt your
What's one of your favorite
beautiful summer day?
Wines, Tony.
Ooh, I know
there are probably 8,000 on that list.
The problem with starting the list is stopping it.
Yeah, exactly.
The first thing that strikes me is I had gotten a couple of 3-liter bottles called Jeroboam's of champagne of a special bottling called Salon, spelled like Salon, right?
Right.
From the 1976 vintage. And this is probably 15, 16 years ago that that we opened one of these for a wine tasting group dinner that I was part of. And it just struck not just me, it sort of put a spell on everybody in the room. Mm. The wine was incredibly complex. I mean, it's a lot of times people think of champagne as it's just going to be fizzy and it's just kind of neutral. And great champagne is great wine. It happens to sparkle. This is from a spectacular site and very, very talented wine grower and very, very small production. And just the devil to get anymore and crazy expensive. And I had no idea. You know, in retrospect, I now have an idea of how silly it was for me to be able to get those 3-liter bottles of of Salon. But that's the first thing on my list. And probably champagne is not the thing that people think I'm going to think is the best thing I ever drank, but that's definitely number one on my list. The second is a California wine. In 1991, I was working in Washington, D.C., and I went to eat at Jean-Louis at the Watergate. I had a friend tell me that I should try. I'd spent a lot of time learning European wine, and I had a friend tell me that I should try a really, you know, fabulous, mature California wine. And so he gave me a bottle of 1969 BV, the Georges Latour Reserve.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Which was back in the days when it was, you know, it was always 100% cab. And and Andre Chicheloff was still alive, who was the, you know, the man whose dream was making that particular wine. And 69 is not the most heralded vintage. 68, 74 were sort of like the two big markers. And oh my gosh. And the first time I really had great glassware, Jean-Louis had these fantastic, you know, hand-blown Riedel Bordeaux glasses that were 33 ounces that they would pour, you know, 2-3 ounces of wine in. So you could play with it. You could really see visually what was going on in the glass. Mm-hmm. The aromas are fantastic. It's like going from black and white television to a, you know, 72-inch big screen that's digital. I mean, the difference was shocking in what was displayed.
Yeah, that's amazing.
In the wine. And it was fantastically complex and, you know, beautiful texture, all the things that you want. But that was another one. It was definitely going from black and white to color.
That's amazing. I love BV.
With that wine.
I kind of cut my teeth on those wines. You know, I mean, when I worked in Charleston at the beginning of my career, the restaurant where I worked in the Planner's Inn, it was a 95% California wine cellar. It was very unusual for that time. And in the early 80s, mid 80s. And we had a lot of BV on Ridge, you know, and those are wines that just, I mean, I'd never.
Some of the historical wineries in California.
Yeah, so, so fantastic.
So let's go to a caller, Frank in Catonsville.
Hi, Frank.
How are you?
Pleasure to speak to you. I'm thinking back to about 1989 when I traveled to Dakar, Senegal, with the African-American Summit, and one of my closest buddies is a Senegalese named Bokar Lee. And Bokar said, I want to take you out one night to my favorite restaurant. And we went to a restaurant where it was all outside, and they served chebuchen, which is the national dish of Senegal, which is rice and vegetables and hot peppers. And it was just atmospheric, delicious, and unlike any of the chebuchen I'd ever eaten in the United States at a Senegalese restaurant. It was a wonderful introduction to the real feel, real food, because he was happy to introduce me to his favorite chef.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And this wonderful, luscious, delicious dish.
Was there one detail that really made it stand out or made it special compared to other versions of chebuchen that you had?
I think that partly it was that not only was it truly peppery in a way that you don't get here. I mean, it was very hot, but it was hot, flavorful, as opposed to hot where somebody's trying to sear their tongue to show how hot they can eat something. And also, it was a blend of other spices that I don't know of. I'm not sure what they were. and the fish was fresh caught. It had been caught probably in a half an hour before they brought the fish in from the sea, and it was on the coast of Senegal, and it was just a combination of all those things. And it's a rice eating culture, which was great. My mother's from Augusta, Georgia, and would make what she'd call dirty rice, which was hot.
Dirty rice is good.
I love making dirty rice.
Mm. Yeah, and so there was this combination of something that was like my home, but then there was the Senegalese derivative of it, or the home.
I was going to say, that'd be a lot more like the origin of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the origin of it, exactly. So it was a wonderful combination of flavors and experience.
That's a great experience.
That's just great, Frank.
Thank you.
Makes you feel
better
about my decision to support Senegal in the World Cup.
Well, when I left the house today, they were
No, don't tell me. Please don't tell me.
We'll tell you.
Don't.
You're doing well.
Thanks, Frank.
Sorry.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
Please, no callers. Tell me about the World Cup result. Okay, we're live today. It's 410-662-8780, or send us an email without that World Cup result. Foreman Wolf at WYPR.org. When we come back, it's more of the best thing you ever ate and maybe the best thing you ever drank on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're talking about the best things you ever ate. You can call us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org.
Do you want me to tell you how to make dirty rice, since that's what he was talking about?
Yeah, a quick version.
Quick version.
Caller on the line.
Chicken livers. That's the whole key to dirty rice. So I puree mine in the food processor raw. And then I saute onions, a little bit of shallot. You could add a little bit of garlic if you like garlic, and butter gently. And then add the pureed chicken livers to it, work it, and then add the rice, good chicken stock, Tabasco, salt and pepper, make the rice. It's one of the best things in the world. I love dirty rice. I'm so glad he talked about that.
Well, that's apropos. Let's go to our caller, Sue in Baltimore County.
Hey, Sue. How are you?
Hi there.
Afternoon.
I would like to share a dish that I had when I was 19 in Venice. And the hotel dining room at breakfast was outside, surrounded by flowers and vines. Mm. And they brought a personal-sized cast iron skillet with the most elegantly sautéed chicken liver, a nice portion of fresh asparagus, perfectly cooked, and a sunny-side-up egg. And I have never had a breakfast to match that anywhere.
Sounds
great.
That
sounds pretty worthwhile. I have to ask, what did you drink with it?
I don't remember. It has been so long ago. Mm-hmm. Probably coffee or tea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sounds so good. And what a beautiful memory that is.
Yes. And then may I ask a question?
Sure.
Of course.
I am a Hoosier by birth. And there is this wonderful sandwich that I've only encountered in Indiana called a breaded tenderloin. And I would love to know how you make it so that I can recreate it here, because I've never been able to find a restaurant outside Indiana that serves them.
And I lived in Indiana growing up. I've never heard of that. So I'm sorry, I am not sure how what that traditional recipe would be, but we'll have to look it up.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
I love
Sue.
Listening to your show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling.
Thanks,
Sue. Great story.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's a worthwhile breakfast right there.
Oh, that sounds so good. And Venice is, I mean, I can just see the flowers on the, you know, the terrace where she was sitting. And I love when people tell stories and you're totally transported by, I can just see it all.
Yeah.
And she was 19. That's cool. Great experience.
That is great. Let's go to Stacy in Baltimore. Stacy has a tale for us.
Good afternoon, Stacy. How are you?
Hey, Stacy.
Hi,
there?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
So what's the best thing you ever ate?
Well, I had a very difficult pregnancy that was difficult to get pregnant, and then also it was complicated in a high-risk pregnancy, and one of the things that was complicated by was gestational diabetes. And so I couldn't have any sugar or carbs at all. Even one piece of bread would push my blood sugars too high. And when I delivered my son, my husband stayed up all night and made these cream puffs that he's famous for with our friends. But surprisingly, I'd never actually tried them before. But they were just amazing and the best thing I'd ever tasted after months of no sugar at all.
Oh, my goodness.
Feed into it and the custard just exploded and they were dipped in this like dark chocolate jelly. And it was just the best thing that
you'll
I've
never
ever
forget
seen.
That. That's amazing. Thank you, Stacy.
Worthwhile.
Yes, it was totally worth it. And now he makes it on my son's birthday, and my son finally got to try it at age two, and he doesn't get very much refined sugar or anything. Mm-hmm. And when he bit into that for the first time, his face just lit up. It was amazing, and it brought me back to the day that he was born. And
that's beautiful.
What an amazing cook my husband is.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
Just fantastic.
You're sweet. That's thank you for sharing. Thanks,
Stacy.
Thanks
for having me on the air. I'm
absolutely
a big fan. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. So let's talk to Linda in Farm Grove, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Linda.
Linda, how are you?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Mm. So what's your story?
Well, in the summertime, I put in a reasonably nice garden, and my husband starts making fried tomatoes as soon as they start to get just a little bit of a red color to them. Mm-hmm. And for breakfast, he will make me fried tomatoes in a rainbow of colors from green to red. And his secret to getting a really excellent tomato is in his dredging flour. He adds a little bit of cornmeal, mm-hmm. some Old Bay, and sugar.
Oh.
That isn't the most regional fried green tomato dish, I don't know what is.
They're just so crispy.
That's nice.
And he always does a wide variety of the colors.
That's great.
You know, because there's a
beautiful
difference between.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yeah.
And he serves it with his freshly made iced coffee, which is amazing, too.
Oh, he sounds That's like the perfect husband.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a good situation, Linda.
Good for you. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing, Linda.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
You too. Oh, I love green tomatoes. You know, and it's funny, I've never tried to fry red ones. You know, they're tender, so that's why, you know, you tend to think of cooking the green ones because they're more firm and easier to handle. But, oh, yeah, I like the idea of all the different tones and
have
flavors
right
between.
Have it right at that moment that it's changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Cornmeal. So just for fun, mine is we do straight cornmeal with a little bit of cayenne pepper, and we put nothing else on them. And then when they come out of the pan, we lightly salt them. And but yeah, the Old Bay is probably that's a great idea for local people.
Well, fried green tomatoes is a good vehicle for a lot of different things. Whether you put poached egg on it, or mm-hmm. you know, you put lobster hash on it, or.
Mm-hmm.
Any number of fun.
As I do.
You do stuff like that.
I do things like that. I use a lot of green tomatoes right now. Mm. I have a buffalo mozzarella salad on with fried green tomato and saffron and lime vinaigrette. But let's go to your next meal, Tony, your favorite.
Well, that's I guess while I was thinking about my roommate from Taiwan in college, it makes me think of there's a Chinese restaurant in Miami, of all
mm-hmm.
places,
mm-hmm.
called Hakkasan that... I've been very fond of a lot of the cooking in. And there's a dish that we had that was asparagus and lily bulb.
Wow.
That was strong flavors, okay. really balanced. I mean, two incredibly juxtaposed vegetable flavors. The one seemingly bitter and very green, and the other sort of sweet in a way that is very different from carrots. I don't know what else to mm-hmm. what else to characterize it. There's also a lotus root dish that mm-hmm. they make. That we've had versions of with, where it was just garlic and one where there was with black truffle that was sort of shocking and great and an incredibly nice match for Chateau Reyes.
That's
the
cool.
great Chateauneuf du Pape. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's
one
interesting.
Of those things that's like I got it intuitively and
sure. cool.
It worked and I got to feel brilliant about it.
Yeah, I think
which is okay.
I think one of the ones I can't not mention is Beau Gravier. The first time we had the salad with the truffles, with the good French frisée.
That's on my list.
Seriously,
yeah.
You know, just
really crunchy,
great
amazing
lettuce.
Frisée.
Yeah, great frisée, good extra virgin olive oil from the region. Beautiful truffles, and he's so generous with the amount of truffles he put. I mean, it's just like this mound of lettuce with a mound of sliced truffle.
Well, it's a dome.
It's a dome of truffle. It is a truffle dome. It is truffle heaven.
It's like one of these soccer stadiums covered in truffles.
And then the other one he does where he shaves the very super thin slices of the terrina foie gras on there. Oh, golly.
That is not same caloric value as the salad you were describing.
No, I'm not worried about calories, Tony.
I believe
not
you.
In any way,
so,
Tony.
clearly, this is a live broadcast. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. We have a few minutes left where you can sneak in a story or two. I do have an off-topic email from a listener.
Oh, good.
That I
okay.
wanted to slip in here. Ciao. Buongiorno dall'Italia. So that's Jessica's. That's what she said. I have a question about how to cook without onions. I hate them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, hate
it's hard to cook without onions.
Like my four-year-old says, hate is not a nice word.
Uh-oh.
Don't say that.
All right.
Every color, cooked, raw, doesn't matter.
Uh-oh.
I don't want them. This includes spring onions, shallots, and every other sister, brother, and cousin of the onion.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Okay.
I'm a vegetarian, so many vegetarian recipes and dishes in restaurants start with onions. Some recipes are fine, just leaving out the onions, but others clearly lack something.
It's a foundation. It's just a foundation
something in quotes.
So much cooking. That's the problem.
Let me finish your message.
I'm listening.
There's a hole in the overall flavor, and I don't know how to resolve it. I love garlic and ginger.
Mm-mm.
Should we tell her that garlic is related to onion?
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute, I don't understand.
She did say cousins. How about uncle?
I wish we could talk to her.
I love garlic and ginger and use these along with lots of other spices. Any recommendations on how to get full flavor without using onions?
I wonder if she would eat a cipollini onion, which is technically a flower bulb and not an onion. I mean, that would be, I mean, I'm not sure what the problem is, but.
I think training is what's probably required. So I don't know that I can solve, you know, I don't know that I can or you can solve what the issue is by not telling you the truth. Garlic is related to onion. There's something about onion that you do like. The question is going to be to try a variety of different onions, whether it's something that's like an onion, like a cipollini.
Maybe just use some celery, too. You know, celery kind of. It's just, I don't know. I can't, as a chef,
celery
I can't
is a whole
even,
other
I can't
tribe.
Figure this out. I can't, because we need onions to make, it's a foundation of almost everything.
I mean, there's certainly plenty of dishes that are excellent without onions, but if
sure.
you want dishes that are...
But if you're making something like a soup
exactly.
or a sauce or...
I think it may be the
onions
that...
the first thing we do is
start off. You need to find a source for an onion that works, whether it's a,
well, I wonder if she's a
very mild sweet onion or a
Vidalia
onion.
Maybe she would like them.
A Walla right. Walla sweet, something should. Like that.
All right. All
give
right,
those a shot. You probably don't want to slice of like red Bermuda onion. That'll that'll give you a fit.
Thank you very much for your email,
Jessica.
All right.
Ciao.
Let's talk to Barry.
Barry in Parkville, go ahead.
Yes, I just had a response to the lady who was asking about the Indiana pork tenderloin
sandwich. Oh, good.
It's also known as an Iowa skinny.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so
all
it's
right.
anti-Indiana message. I love this.
But it was actually started in Indiana, from what I read about it.
Okay.
The second thing is, if you haven't had fried red tomatoes, which is what I was raised on, you haven't eaten.
All right. Got it.
Because they are far superior to the green because they have taste.
Yeah, all right.
They have the tomato taste.
I'm going to make some.
So
I appreciate you coming on and taking a position.
they have to be firm. They can't be really overripe, but they have to be red and they have to be firm.
Okay.
But they are delicious.
That sounds great.
Okay, that's my information
Thank you.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, and you declined the chef's challenge today, didn't you?
No.
You saw the list that I made, and you were super intimidated.
I did not decline. Tony, I just want to talk to our listeners. This is the most important thing to me.
You should see this chef challenge
Tony wrote up.
Yeah.
It has like 80 ingredients on it. Hey, man,
I wanted it to be
fun
for you.
I am up to any challenge.
I still would prefer
to hear about another favorite wine of yours
since you're
the wine guy. I'd like to hear about some wines, preferably from my birth year. which was 1984.
1920 produced excellent wines from the village of Margaux in Bordeaux. Mm. And I had a chance to taste 1920 Dufaux Vivaine, to drink 1920 Dufaux Vivaine.
What?
Probably 6 or 7 years ago.
That's so amazing.
Mm. And it was a remarkable, I mean, it's everything you want. It was everything that you want from Cabernet Sauvignon, from Margaux, from that sandy soil. It's pure black fruit, very mild tannins, and obviously at age, you know, 95 or whatever it was when I had it.
Wow.
It was completely, you know, the tannins are melted entirely. Mm. But it faded very quickly, which is not a surprise. It was like watching the most beautiful ancient movie star come down the staircase and just become a ghost by the time she reached the bottom of the stair.
So how long did it take for it to... So it was once, so they didn't decant it or anything. It was just like open the bottle, drink
right.
it, and then it
right.
was.
Right. It's once
it
the
faded.
Cork was pulled, probably 15, 20 minutes tops.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's
but the first,
move fast.
The first 10 minutes were completely thrilling.
That's exciting.
So let's see if we can sneak in one last call here from Julia in Baltimore.
Hey, Julia.
Julia, go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
My favorite thing I've ever eaten is any wild game that I myself cook. I do not use any seasoning on wild game. No matter what it is. And I've eaten groundhog, squirrel, rabbit, deer, elk, but
wow.
I use no seasoning.
That is awesome.
Julia, you're awesome and
you,
also
do
intimidating.
Do you braise the food or do you grill it or how do you cook all these?
Actually, what I do is sear it on all sides to start with, mm-hmm. and then pour some water in the pan, turn the fire down low, and let it simmer.
Okay, yeah. All right.
And then brown it up.
Okay. Good
after
for you.
That.
That's awesome.
But it keeps the gamey taste, which is what I really like.
Sure.
And which everybody tries to get rid of.
I know.
With all their
good for you.
Onions.
Flavor, flavor is worth pursuing, Julia.
That's awesome.
Thank you
yeah.
so much.
Super
for,
cool.
Thank you so much for giving
thank
us a
you.
Call. We're running
thank
out
you for
of
calling.
Time.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much to everybody that called
yeah,
and
that was
emailed
fun.
Us. And thanks for listening to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. If you want to reach us via email, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Yes, we do actually read your emails. You can download podcasts of past episodes. Just go to the WYPR webpage, wypr.org, and look up the Foreman Wolf page, and you can see a whole menu of goodies. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Cindy Wolf. Actually, it's Chef Wolf, or on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf, sorry.
And I'm the real Tony Foreman
yes.
on Instagram. And thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.